Delighted to be today in once again New Vic, and Chad Haig and David Ahmed, the two of the characters who are appearing in
Good Golly Miss Molly.
Yeah, sounds good already. So tell me a little bit about it. You know, I did see it way back in time, and it makes you feel old, I know, Chad, but nevertheless I did see it some time ago, and just tell people what it's all about.
Yeah, well, I was in the original production, 1989, and Bob wrote it initially. I think he was sent out on a mission to create a piece of documentary theatre, but at the same time he had thoughts of putting his Beatles Lennon musical on here, and young Michael Jackson had got hold of the rights to all the Beatles songs and wouldn't release them. so miraculously Bob kind of melded the notion of the rock and roll musical with the documentary story of the Horse Street residents, who were campaigning to keep their houses from being demolished by the council. So it's a true story, and people from the Residents Association were there on that first night and came to see the show. So that's how it came about, 37 years ago.
And you're not playing the same part, obviously. You played a young young guy then, I think, don't you?
I played a young Ronnie Angel, who grows up within the community with friends. He's a friend of Molly's. And then goes on to Butlin's, where he goes pro and launches his career as a glam rock, so he becomes a glam rock star. And I played that part in 1989. They then brought it back in 1991 and 1993. I did it here. Then Bob Eaton took over the Belgrade Theatre in Coventry and put it on there. So I did it there in 1996. And then in 2004, I did it in Oldham Coliseum, by which time 15 years had passed. I struggled to get into the costume at that point. So I knew my days as Ronnie had come to an end. And I've now aged magnificently into the role of Grandad. So I'm now playing Grandad, which suits me fine.
And what about your part, David? What do you do?
So I play the character of Eddie, who is one of the lads that grows up with Molly and Brian and Stan and Ronnie in the band. And then he sort of splits away from the rest of the group. He becomes a counsellor. He's hiding a lot of secrets. And so he separates himself, so he doesn't really grow up with them after the band, but then obviously comes back, is involved in the story because he's on the council that's trying to knock down the houses. So there's a bit of a redemption arc to him, it's just a cracking good time of a show. I think it's. You know, you were saying that Bob sort of created this genre almost, didn't he?
With
this show back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see that subsequently there have been so many stories like this that have transferred really well to film and stage, like The Full Monty.
Yeah.
Or Brassed Off, you know.
Yeah.
Similar sort of
absolutely.
Tales of communities coming together to fight against
you're right.
social injustice and, you know. And big money.
Yeah,
is this particular one? It's real. Is it set in the '80s or it's set in the '60s? Because I know there's a lot of slum clearance in the '60s, and that was where devastating moves were made.
No, it was set in the time. The Residents Association were formed in the mid to late '80s, so they were extant and still fighting when Bob first went to meet them. But what Bob has done is meld their fight with his memories of growing up as a young fan of rock and roll. He's a big Beatles fan. And so there's some lovely stuff where we go back in time. I go back and see Molly as a toddler. Bob brings in elements of the then culture, TV culture, and the rock and roll culture. And we see Molly grow up through that and through a rebellious school days. David plays her headmaster, who expels her from school. So Bob has melded all that into it, and it makes it really rich. And there's comedy in almost every scene. There's some lovely comic lines that he's written. So it's a lot of fun to do. It's a lot of fun for the audience as well, because you know, if you get bored with us, there's always a song coming up, isn't there?
Nobody's going to get bored. We don't have time to get bored. We're running around changing
headless chickens.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Now, although people may or may not remember the 1980s and that clearance, was of its time, I suppose, was the Workingman's Club that it's set in. And those have very largely disappeared, haven't they, or completely changed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at one time, thriving football business was running, you know, football leagues and everything, because of the, you know, every club had a football team.
Yeah.
So you are actually doing a little bit of history that's, social history that's really disappearing, aren't you?
Sure thing.
So you are, it's a great catalogue thing. So having said that there are things that have, you know, now changed, those things don't exist, I suppose a generation that don't know what a Workingman's Club is, you know, the children won't know of a certain age. Has anything else changed about the play? Have they changed anything else about it, or is it, that's it, it's 1989?
No, it's 1989, very, very minor little tweaks, just where Bob has felt he wanted to tidy up the dialogue, make it some scenes make a bit more sense. That's it. Otherwise, it's pretty extant. It's pretty much as it was when we initially did it.
Were all the songs the same?
That's a good question. Largely, yes. Yeah. All the songs we were doing were in the 1989 production. There was one or two other songs which were added. For reasons I can't remember. I think I remember we did Get Ready in the 1993 show. I remember Georgina Field and her saxophone.
Georgie's also in the show with us.
She was in the 1993 production. But that seems to have been dropped on this occasion. So we're kind of back to its original skeleton, really. And
What I think is right, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it was one of the first productions that was actually using actor musicians. Am I right in saying that the people were, you know, at one time people, musicians came and did a bit of acting, but now they're getting more and more, the new Vic, that the actors are the musicians as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I didn't really have much experience as an actor musician at that point in 1989 when we did it. I mean, the first show I did with Bob was in 1988. He did a production of Mice and Men, and he'd written sort of country and western song, sort of bluesy songs mark the scene changes, right? So I played the guitar and sang the songs, a bit of harmonica. That was the first time I'd sort of brought my guitar on stage with me as an actor. So when we came to do Good Golly Miss Molly, and he suddenly gave me a Fender Strat and said, "You're playing this glam rock star," and go, what? How am I going to do that? I've got to play lead breaks. How do I play lead breaks? I was really freaked by it. In order to calm our nerves, Bob managed to get us all a pre-show gig at what was the Queen's Head on the top of the hill here, which is now flats. So we played the pub like the week before the gig, which kind of, okay, we can do this. I can get up there and go...
I think Bob would like to claim the fact that he was the first person to use actor musicians in a show. I don't know. I suppose it continues a tradition from the 60s. You know, there were plenty of musicians who turned their hand to acting and actors like Adam Faith and Elvis, you know, in these films. In terms of like theatrical staging with actors, I don't know, but I think he'd take that accolade.
I'm sure he would. Yeah.
Well, I think there was also a tradition here of putting music in the shows, and
Peter brought
in a lot of folk oriented material in, to beef up the documentaries, for instance. So, but I remember he'd actually bring in folk musicians and folk singers. I worked with John Kirkpatrick here, who was in Steel I Span and Fairport Convention, and I worked with Peter Bellamy, who's in the Young Tradition. Amazing.
How important is it for an actor to actually have more than one string? You know, obviously to act, but also to keep on learning and having different things like puppetry is coming in and so on.
Yeah.
How important is it to keep on going and learning things time after time?
Well, I think it's important that you learn from every job that you do. I mean, certainly I'm always learning with people that I work with for the first time, you know, meet new people, meet new skills. I'm a big fan of the theatricality of different methods of storytelling. Say, for example, puppetry, playing songs and singing. I think it's really... I think it allows the audience a way into shows and is an inventive way of telling a story that is unique and special to theatre. And I love those kind of shows. So I think it's really important to have plenty of skills. But obviously, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. But as an actor, it definitely makes you more employable if you can play a musical instrument and sing and...
Ride a horse.
Yeah, I can't do that.
No,
and I wouldn't lie. That's probably the one thing I wouldn't lie about.
No,
my CV.
You don't fancy doing circus tricks, because those are coming in more and more into new.
Well, and Teresa, who runs the theatre here, has a lot of shows that use acrobats and aerialists, and they look. I mean, they're incredible to watch on stage, but I don't quite have the body for it.
No,
yet.
Do I?
Yet.
You can always work towards it. So you're into rehearsals, you are what, 2 or 3 weeks in. So what's the process? You get the script pushed through your door, or is it special courier or whatever? What do you do with that then, the script? Do you straight away look through? Do you start learning your part straight away? Do you get into your head, or are you waiting for the director to actually tell you?
In my case, I haven't done the show so many times. The lines of Grandad are in me. They're in there, in my DNA. And so line learning, I've just allowed that to sort of mutate by osmosis as we've gone along, really.
I generally prefer to be... Sometimes when you get when you start rehearsals, you know, you're sat around a table for several days going through the script and talking about it. Well, I definitely prefer to get up on my feet and start moving through it, because inevitably the same questions that come up around the table come up when you're already on your feet, and they start to make a bit more sense when you're in the space and you know your surroundings. Yeah. So generally, I mean, we've sort of worked through the entire play now, haven't we?
We stood it up pretty much from day one and
started off with a bit of music.
Yeah.
We're putting in the dances now. There's some big dance set pieces.
Yeah.
In terms of lines, you know, I generally prefer to learn them as we're going along. You know, once we've been through a scene once or two or three times, then we can they just go in a bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can hear some music or something going on.
Oh, that's the rest of the company warming up.
Yeah. So. I've always been fascinated by how people, you know, actors really learn the lines. I presume it comes out of practice. It's your job. You've got to learn the lines and that's it, you know. So my Amdram stuff, you know, you're trying to learn it around a job and you sort of, you know, you're keeping going all the time.
Yeah, but often in the amateur theatre world, you've got a much longer rehearsal period. Yeah. So you've got kind of longer with the lines, whereas here you've got 4 weeks... 5 weeks to inculcate it into your memory banks.
But you're right. I mean, we're doing it as a full-time job every day, so the lines are constantly going through our heads as we're doing it. So I think, you know, repetition.
Yeah. And standing it up as well helps, because you sort of learn where you are in the space, and so you know which line comes wherever you are in the on stage.
And sometimes what costume you've got on, really.
Yeah, well, preferably.
You are veterans. You're particularly a veteran of New Vic. Well, by veteran, you've been in a lot of productions, and you've certainly, David, been in quite a number of productions here at New Vic. There are some newbies, though. What has their impression been of the New Vic? Well, you know, they've not really probably seen something like this before. What do you think their impressions have been?
Well, they're all very. I mean, I'm struck by how adept they are musically. They're all great singers, great musicians. They're picking up the songs so quickly, much quicker than I recall us doing first time round. Mm. It felt more like a bunch of actors being thrust some guitars last time, whereas now it feels much more. These are actor musicians, and they're really good. Mm. So that's helped the rehearsal process as well in that sense. And they're all at ease. They're perfectly comfortable with their musical instrument, so they know what they're doing.
They've also thrown themselves into it. I mean, it's quite shows like these can be quite tricky because you're asked quite a lot of your acting skills and your temperament as a human being, you know, to be going from very serious moving acting scenes to be thrown into a dance number, to be strapping on a guitar and playing a song and then singing and then getting changed whilst you're doing it. So they're really quite challenging shows technically and demanding physically, and everybody's really embraced it and thrown themselves into it. It's a really lovely bunch of people.
Yeah,
we're having quite a lot of fun.
I am, I think it comes through, man. Comes through, it shows.
And you know, we're obviously steering them in the right direction. We can tell them where the best pub is.
That's not too far away, are they?
Yeah, well, like.
Not too far away at all. So, lastly, it's Good Golly Miss Molly. You know, that's the title of a great rock and roll track, anyway. You've already said the score is lots of rock and roll. What's your favourite routine? What's your favourite bit of this, if you were asked to pick one?
Song-wise, My Girl, I find really touching. It comes at a quite poignant moment in the play, in the narrative, as Molly loses her mother but gains a daughter at the same time. And so the song acts as a pivot between the death and the birth, and really makes the hairs on the back of your neck rise up.
Even as an actor.
Yeah.
Even as an actor, yeah. Yeah, and David, have you got a particular? You can't pick My Girl now.
So well, lots of the songs are great. You know, they're all songs that I loved as a kid, growing up. But I think the most fun that I've got playing at the minute, and it might change by the time show, is Dancing in the Street. We play that, and because I think pretty much everybody's on an instrument for that, and the arrangement and the orchestration is great, and it's sounding brilliant, so that's quite a fun one to play.
There's a lot of brass, so we've got a good brass line behind us. So three saxes and a trumpet.
Full band, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, even though you've made me feel very old, because I saw the very first show back in 1989, I can't believe how long ago it is. I'm really looking forward to the show, and I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope you've enjoyed the little chat that we've had today.
Good, great. Thank you, David. Rock on.
Rock on, definitely. Good Golly Miss Molly, that was good, wasn't it?